Tired of all the bugs in your yard? Enjoy your backyard again with Cutter Backyard Ready to Spray Bug Control at Menards. It kills mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, and other insects fast, controlling them for up to 12 weeks. A 32-ounce Ready to Spray container covers up to 5,000 square feet and is on sale now through July 13th. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Corn Stars of Reddit. How did you get in the business? What is your best story and why have you stopped? Story 1. When I was 18, I was told by my parents that I would have to start paying my way. They said I would have until I was 19 to begin paying for smaller things, my car, cell phone, insurance, and then would have to be out of the house within 6 months. I started a part-time job at a grocery store and began looking for other sources of income, since that part-time job only gave me roughly 15 hours a week, not quite enough to live off of. One day I saw an ad for a small film company looking for women of my age interested in playing bit parts, so I figured if I had the day off I would head in. As it turned out, I did. I got in my car, went to what I thought was the studio, which ended up being a smaller building, and joined the queue of roughly 10 girls already lined up. After about 20 minutes, during which I acquainted myself with a couple of girls I stood next to, a man came out, holding a clipboard and pen, and asked us each to write a name and contact information, passing the clipboard back. Following this, we all filed inside, and a small team of people began looking us over, discussing parts and whether we would fit roles. In the end, I only played a small role in a couple of no-name pilots, and the studio ended up just being an agency for bit parts. No real money came from it, but I did make a connection with the guy who had originally come outside. He knew some people, and I needed any help I could get, since my deadline for moving out was now 2 months away. He said he'd see what he could do. 2 weeks later, he called me saying he needed to ask me something. He asked if I would be okay with some porno modeling or videos. I had been, at that point, seriously considering any and all avenues of employment, wasn't happy about it, but I wasn't scared to do what I had to do. So I said yes. Once again, I made sure I had the day off, went to another building that turned out to actually be a studio, and was given my role as a student trying to beg her professor for extra credit, the classic one. As things progressed, I began to find the scene, took a fair amount of effort to keep moving, and by the time any clothing actually came off, it had been an hour or two of shooting. It came time for the actual banging, which I had prepared for. But they wanted to make sure I was okay with what would happen. It would be from behind, and would have to look into the camera, not behind me, for the shot. I was positioned, and we began. It was an odd feeling. I had never done it with someone, when neither of us was particularly interested in the other. Halfway through, I couldn't take it anymore, and I peered back, only to find out that I was being pounded by a 35-story monster from the Scottish Isles. The strange thing was, he didn't want no 3.50, he just wanted to be loved. We've been together 3 years now, and I can imagine doing anything else. Before we continue, do us a quick favor, smash that like button, and subscribe to support our channel. Story 2. I was 18, and I was just accepted into UCLA, so I really needed money. I thought I could make some really easy money from corn. It appeared to me to simply be money for banging. It was a really enticing offer. I was worried that I'd contract an STD, but my friend told me that California keeps a really strict regulation over the industry. He told me they have regular checkups for AIDS and STDs, so I'd be safe, even without a rubber. I thought I'd make $1,000 for each video, which would only take a few hours out of my day. I really wanted to do this. I decided to apply online, and I eventually found a website. I came across a site which asked for applications via email. I filled out their form, which asked for information about myself and my interests in bed. They asked me what I wanted to do, what I wanted to avoid, and to send photos of myself. After a few days, I received a call back from the guy, and I asked my friend to drop me off at the studio. He drove me there, and I was met by 5 different guys, one with a camera and 4 others with really big dongs. For perspective, I'm 5'8", slim, and I've been described as a less Jewy Alison Brie. They were all ahead above me, and all looked significantly stronger, as if they lifted regularly. They told me the plan for the day and what I'd need to do. It seemed pretty simple. I'd just give them all a blowy, some handwork, bang them in different positions, then do a facial. I was slightly nervous, but it seemed like fun. I was asked to kneel in front of a couch. The camera guy sat in front of me on a stool, turned on the camera, and started to record. He'd ask me really basic questions that were in the application form, like why I decided to get into corn and what my interests were. After a few minutes, he started calling me a frigging whore who had her priorities screwed. I didn't think too much of it, until the other guys started getting handsy. At first it was fairly gentle, but after a short while, it felt like I was being stabbed in the throat. His hands grabbed my head, like a basketball, and did thing that felt like I was going to die. Before we finished, one of the guys went too hard, so I threw up all over him and slightly on the camera guy. I cleaned myself up, told them to go fet themselves, and left. I never went back, and I'll never want to. I've never felt so guilty and ashamed of myself. I tried to off myself once, but I just passed out and woke up with vomit all over my shirt. I couldn't shake the feeling in my throat for a solid week. It felt like I swallowed sawdust. I couldn't shake the embarrassment and shame for months though. Even now, it's still with me. I fear that someone I know will eventually find the video and show it to others. I don't even know if they uploaded it or trashed it due to the vomit. I was paid $200 for it, which definitely wasn't worth the trauma. They initially stated they'd give me $500 for it, as I was a first-timer, but they said the vomit ruined it all and that I was a stupid frigging bitch who just screwed things up. The closest I've come to finding a video of my experience is finding a series of videos called The Trolling of Wannabe Corn Stars. He's not the same guy, but I used to believe it that he was. I wanted to believe that he was the guy, but he's not. I doubt I'll ever find him again. I have no idea what the actual guy did anything with my video. To this day, I worry and become anxious if someone approaches me on the street. I fear they've seen my video and they want to say something to me. I have trouble trusting people now, and every time I hear someone talk about corn, it reminds me of that and it ruins my day. I can't concentrate or focus on anything else until it leaves my mind, which can take a few days. It really sucks, but I did what I did, and I'm getting slightly better, but it's still there. Story 3. I answered an ad on Monster.com. No joke. I was just getting started in the entertainment industry, and I was in my early 20s. The ad stated that they needed someone with production experience and office experience, which I had. It also said, Jill Kelly Productions, so I knew exactly what I was applying for. I answered the ad, met up with the people who ran the company, including Jill. The offices were in a house that she shared with the owner of the company, so when I met her, I was sitting on her bed, and she was sitting at her desk. No real-life corn stuff, but it was funny. I got hired on as the assistant to the head of production and distribution. I left about 8 months later, after the owner threw a stapler at me. I had processed a check to pay a crew member he didn't want me to pay, which was messed up. I walked out right after it happened, and later found a job with a gay wrestling company called Can-Am, worked there for about a year, then quit because I wasn't doing what I wanted to do, which is work on real movies. So, the craziest story I have, Can-Am's main distributor was a company called Marina Pacific, who owned production companies of their own, including a gay corn company, which was being run by this guy named David Kroll. David was this fat, old, tanned guy who would Hawaiian shirts and loafers and troll gyms looking for hunky straight guys. Back in 2003, gay for pay was big. Gay men want to see manly men banging, so people like David would offer straight guys good money to be in gay corn. But as you would imagine, this is easier said than done. So what David would do is get the most naive guys and promise them that the guys who do straight corn started off in gay corn, and if they act in his films, he'll get them a gig in straight corn. The problem was that in 2003, the gay and straight streams did not cross. No distributor would touch a straight corn if the actor was known to be in gay corn, because the distributors were paranoid that straight men would be grossed by that and not by the title. Also, if you're in gay corn long enough, it's actually difficult to transition to straight corn, for reasons that I kinda understand. You get used to one kind of act in front of people, so switching that up can be difficult, even if you're straight. Anyway, so me and my coworker, who's now one of my best friends, We're doing a Can-Am shoot with some guys that David had recommended to us. My coworker was the creative director of another company called Matrock, which was owned by Can-Am, except that it was straight wrestling corn. Guy, girl, 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 etc. One of the guys we were using in the Can-Am shoot had just turned 18 about a couple of months before. Little guy, still had braces on, and of course he's in a four-way tag team match, and ends up getting banged by all three guys. Normal day. After the scene, the guy comes up to my co-worker and I, and asks about
coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Starring in Matrock titles, he told us that David told him that he could get him into straight corn and to talk to my coworker. The problem was that Matrock did not hire gay corn guys for the reasons I mentioned above. So, my coworker told him that, and he started crying. Like really crying, and there's nothing worse than seeing an 18-year-old kid with braces crying after he just got banged by three guys. We took him aside, and he told us what David had been doing. He was trolling gyms, promising straight corn, but also housing them in his house, and getting them to give him blowies. You want to do straight corn? This is how they all got there. So this kid was giving David's fat disgusting dong a blowie, and getting banged by guys on a promise that could never happen. I never felt so low in my life. Me and my coworker told our boss, who then went to Marina Pacific. I don't know what happened, but all I know is that David got fired, and we put the kid in a tag team match with three really hot girls. He was super happy and performed great. We hooked him up with some other contacts, including Jill Kelly, and wished him luck. I don't know what happened to him, but I knew that we were way more careful with the people that we brought on. Story 4. So, I was an exotic dancer for about half a year, and then a cam girl MFC for another 5 months or so. I started a few days after I turned 18. I come from an extremely religious family. Looking back, it reminds me of Westboro Baptist, just without the picketing and less hate. But the fundamentals were the same. The Bible is the literal word of God, and that meant, among other things, that female sexuality was disgusting. It was never said to me, but the vibe I got was that only Ors liked having physical relations. I was SA'd by a boyfriend when I was younger, and didn't ever tell anyone, because I thought it was my fault for tempting him or something. It was awful. I don't know how to say it without sounding conceited, but I don't know how else to get the idea across. I was a cute kid and developed early. I've got big stuffs and a pretty face. What do you want from me? And this freaked out my grandparents, and my mother dad wasn't really around. He had his own problems, and we didn't talk much. It was drilled into my head early and often that physical relation is bad, and it was especially bad for me. Purity was the highest virtue outside of love, and I believed it, and became terrified of physical intimacy. I have to say this next bit to explain how I lost my faith. It's a long story, but the short of it is this. My grandmother, who I really truly loved, and was as close as a best friend to me as she could be, considering the age gap and the religious fundamentalism, got very sick one day, and she didn't want to go to the hospital, and my grandpa didn't want to take her, and we all believed that faith healing was real. It would be a sin to take her to the hospital, because it was a weakness in our faith. And then she died, and it shook my family to its core, but me most of all, I think, even more than my mother, who took it awfully hard. And I couldn't help but wonder how God could have let that happen, because if there was anyone that deserved being healed, it was this beautiful, wonderful, loving woman, and he took her life. I started questioning and began to lose my faith, and found myself particularly angry about one thing, my stolen sexuality. I had spent years terrified of it, terrified of being attracted to someone, terrified of urges and desires. As I began to lose my faith, I began to allow myself some leeway in terms of chastity and then more, and I finally lost my faith entirely, but not my anger for having been betrayed in this way. I became rebellious, even spiteful about it. The first time I became physical, on my own terms, was a giant, liberating middle finger to my family and their awful beliefs. It was like I had spent my whole life in a dark room, and suddenly the curtains were thrown back, and I could see light and color for the first time. I know that's an awful grandiose way of describing my first consensual experience, but that's really how it felt. The shackles were gone, not just on my sexuality, but my life. As I approached 18 years of age, at the behest of my best friend, who was a rebel by default and didn't need the unfair death of a beloved family member to motivate her, I decided the perfect way to empower and completely liberate myself was to become a dancer. It would horrify my family if they ever found out, but that is what made it so enticing. There was nothing wrong with it, nothing bad, nothing evil, and I could do it, all on my own terms. I practiced dancing as much as I could. I lost as much weight as I could. I wasn't overweight, but I wanted to be perfect, and my friend and I went to a big club to try out. She chickened out though, I almost did too. It was scary, but it exhilarating, and I had promised myself I would do this. This was the final battle in the war for my sexuality, and I intended to win. So, I danced. They let me pick my music, and I danced to a song I had come across randomly and inspired me to feel like a badass instead of the meek, scared girl I used to be who believed in nonsense. I rocked that stupid audition and they hired me. My best story is, unfortunately, how I got into this. The experience quickly became more degrading than empowering, but I made so much money so quickly that I didn't stop. Finally, I couldn't stand it anymore and I quit after half a year. I got into camming thinking it would be easier, and it was, but it felt a little sick somehow and I couldn't do that anymore either. I stopped doing it entirely about a year and a half ago. I'm glad for the experience though. Looking back, it was a stupid way to spite my family, but the experiences were worth it, even though so many of them were bad, and the friends I made and the things I learned are worth more than I have room to describe in this comment box. My family still doesn't know. Pardon the expression, but God willing, they never will. Story 5. I actually starred in two movies. Back when I was on my Mormon mission, I accidentally knocked on the door of a house in which they were shooting a corn. After seeing me, the director offered me a large sum of money to star in his film. It was in the five digits. Since my girlfriend wanted to get married at the Mormon church when I came back, and getting married there is crazy expensive, I had to accept. Since they knew I was a Mormon and couldn't be physical before marriage, they offered to use a stunt dong in the penetration scenes. Basically, it was a superhero flick in which I play a superhero that can give people forced peek with a Metroid-like arm cannon. The crew were an interesting bunch. I had a sidekick that helped me with a bat belt full of gadget toys. The actor was actually a graduate from MIT, but did corn occasionally, because he's an addict. Ron Jeremy played one of the villains, and I'm pretty sure the cameraman was gay, though he tried to hide it a lot. Story 6. I went to university and graduated with a film studies degree, but I'd already taught myself how to shoot and edit video as I was growing up. As a kid obsessed with movies, I learned how films were made just by reading, watching, and imitating. When I graduated, I wanted to make movies, like everyone else, but having no real experience under my belt, it was very difficult to find anything, unless I was willing to paint walls and fetch sandwiches, and for next to no money, basically start at the bottom, and spend the next X years working my way up until I would finally be holding a camera editing or having any influence on what was being made. One day I was packing a box of VHS tapes and I found a softcore corn starring top shelf magazine models from UK and Europe. Alone in the flat, I soloed off to it. While I was watching it, it dawned on me how badly it was made. The editing was awful. The framing of the shots was amateur. The styling, the music, all aspects of it were just bad. I thought to myself that I could make a far superior film if I was given the chance. So, in my unemployed frustration, and by now pretty desperate for a job with my old man putting the pressure on me to move out of the house and start working, I wrote them a letter of complaint, telling them how badly produced their movie was, and I offered my services to take them up a level. Around a week later, I'd practically forgotten all about it, and was ready to take any job I could get when the phone rang. It was the boss of this company, and he told me he'd read my letter and asked me if I was serious or not. He told me to come to London for an interview the next day. This was back in 2001, before the mass availability of free internet porn. It was mainly picture sets for top-shelf magazines. They had one guy in their video department who was making softcore scenes for VHS distribution and for broadcast on Playboy UK cable channel. R18 was only just being introduced in the UK. After the interview, I had to show them what I could edit, so I did it for them right there in their post-production studio on a film they were working on. I also showed them all my stupid short films I'd made over the years, most of which I was acting in as well. They could see that I knew what I was doing more than they did, and I was really enthusiastic, despite not really knowing the first thing about corn films, except what I'd seen in those third or fourth generation VHS copies of corn we had in the 90s. But I'd seen real corn movies like Last Tango in Paris, and I'd read Tropic of Cancer and Lady Chatterley's Lover, so I knew I could do this. I was hired to come in immediately and shoot new films, do video editing, start creating DVDs for them, come up with new ideas we could pitch to Playboy TV UK and Paul Raymond magazine editors. I was even doing the graphic design on box covers for DVDs and VHS tapes. I had full access to their studio and their equipment to do whatever I liked. It was incredible. Before my first actual shoot, the boss called me in his studio office about an hour before the model arrived and said, "I have to warn you about this next shoot. It's not what we usually do." Turns out it was a shoot for a series called Plump and Busty, so in walked this gigantic model. I mean heavy, really heavy. She had double M-sized chesticles. She could tie them in a knot. It was mad. That was my first ever corn shoot. Just me, a huge beta, shoulder camera, and this woman soloing off. I remember thinking, what the hell am I doing? I'd never filmed a woman bear before. Never mind directing a hugely overweight woman to solo herself. The toy dong we had for her was the size of a fire extinguisher. The boss was right though, it was not the kind of content I had to create much. It was mostly incredibly amazing, young beautiful European girls and girl-on-girl corn. I became one of the top directors during the time, and made some great movies with some spectacular girls. I was 21 years old, writing corno movies, flying around Europe, and working with the most beautiful women I'd ever seen in my life. I was doing lighting, directing, camera work, everything you can think of. Suddenly Playboy TV wanted 8 projects a year from us. Hardcore takes off legally in the UK and our DVDs start selling like crazy, and I am asked to bring in 4 university buddies to help me make more films. I was also learning things I'd never been taught in film school. I was creating programs for television that had to adhere to strict broadcast standards, so I had to teach myself all about that. But I had all the equipment to learn it on. They were fun times. We weren't making any real money ourselves, just watching this company become more and more successful, but still it was good fun. I'm 35 now and I've started my own company with a very smart businessman who co-founded one of the main corn tube sites. We have about 12 different brands, some of them very well known, and I manage our production and post-production teams. I really love my job. Writing this and looking back makes me feel kind of strange. I never would have thought I'd be working in the adult industry, and to this day I never know what to tell people when they ask me what I do for a living. I've lost a lot of my motivation to make more mainstream movies or work on TV shows because I am happy doing what I do now, although when I see the sheer amount of crappy corn out there and read some of the horror stories about cruel and disrespectful a-hole producers, I do get kind of jaded. But I like the kind of corno I make. Our crew and the models we work with have fun. It's a very good atmosphere, and no one gets hurt, so I believe in what I am doing, and I think it does have some value to it, at least I like to think it does. Story 7. When I first arrived in NYC, I worked in a restaurateur that was the hub of the classic corn industry. It was a place called Bernard Siz. It was directly across the street from the Harmony Burlesque Theater. During the day, the restaurant catered to a crowd attending the Broadway show right next door. Came about 10 p.m. every night, it turned into the meeting place for the entire NYC corn industry. One of the owners of the restaurant was a guy named Freddie, who was some big official in the NYS governor's office. He would show up every night sozed, with some big bodyguard in tow. And if anyone happened to take a photo anywhere in the guy's vicinity, the bodyguard would storm over and break the camera. I got to know many of the corn girls working in that place, and it was a fascinating experience. I had grown up in some middle-class suburban neighborhood, and these weren't the type of people I had generally had the opportunity to meet. Most of them were rather sad types, though, either hooked on drugs or histories of severe abuse. That generally seemed to be the calling card for matriculation into the 1970s corno industry. I could tell a thousand stories of what went on in that place. Tus, heck, there was more action in the bathroom of that restaurant in a single night than I would probably get to see in a lifetime. Unfortunately, this all went on at the dawn of the AIDS era in NYC, and within a few years, most of the girls that hung out at Bernard's would wind up dead. Frankly, I was lucky not to have joined the ranks of those that fell sick. Getting some from a corn star seemed like a badge of honor at the time, but not so much once it became clear that you might have something to worry about for a long time to come. One of the more amusing factoids of that experience, said a girl working as a bartender, there was a wannabe actress, she would later go on to a part on a popular soap opera. After her acting career quickly washed out, she was super cute but completely talentless. She married very rich and is now some big Connecticut socialite, replete with photos of her and the governor. I wonder how her super rich friends would feel if they knew she had worked in a corno bar. No doubt she scrubbed that from her resume. Story 8. I nearly wound up in a corno once. When I was an active pro wrestler, I'd get all sorts of offers to work shows from the next town over all the way to Japan. I had a home-fed wrestling company that I worked with for all their shows and would fit other shows in where I could. I got an offer from a new fed to work a show, minus the pay was good, they were only an hour away and I wasn't booked that night, so I took it. I had a rule that I'd take one of the big wrestlers with me on any new groups, just in case, and this time wasn't any different. So, we get to the place and it's this big cleared-out storefront. Indie wrestling happens in weird places, so no red flags yet. Once inside, I saw a bunch of girls in various stages of undress, and none of them looked like wrestlers. My buddy, let's call him Jack, and I were giving each other the side eye as we walked around looking for the booker, the guy in charge. We finally find him, and he's skeezy. Not unheard of, but at this point, morbid curiosity took over. I'm like, okay, so like we discussed, I only work with trained wrestlers and legit shows. The booker assured me my opponent was trained and everything was cool, all the while glancing at Jack and looking irritated. I asked to see the ring. He leads us down some dim hall, up a set of rickety stairs, down another hall and around a corner where he proudly showed off his professional wrestling ring. It's a blue padding on the floor surrounded by gym mats with fake ring posts and turnbuckles and what looked like garden hose for ropes. There was nowhere for a crowd man, the most important part of a wrestling show, to be seated. This is a friggin' corn shoot, isn't it? I asked Jack. He agreed with my assessment, and we turned to leave. The booker was trying to convince me to stay as we wound our way through this maze of a building, passing by girls in lingerie as they were being shown how to approximate a wrestling tie-up by some other dude who had no idea what he was doing. We passed about 30 girls on our way out. I was actually really shook up after we got out of there. Never took another outside booking again. Story 9. Does it count if I was only paid in beer? This story's about 13 years old now.
I wouldn't believe me either, but it's absolutely true.
About 8 years ago, I was hanging out at the beach and met this really hot redhead and her Asian friend. After a few hours of chilling, they invited me back to their campsite for barbecue and drinks. Somehow the conversation turned to banging, and it turned out they were total freaks. They were into all kinds of wild things. We ended up moving the party into the RV and got to work. I was in the middle of pounding the redhead when I heard the door open behind me. I turned around and there was this guy standing there, just watching. I'm 6'1", about 180 pounds, and he was a few inches shorter but stockier and pretty well muscled. I started to stand up, like what the hell, but she reached up, turned my face back toward hers and said, "Don't worry, it's okay, he's my husband, don't stop." I was still kind of half looking over my shoulder, but she suddenly got really into it, so I stayed excited and kept going. The guy grabbed a beer and sat in a chair off to the side, soloing off until he got his lil guy up. It turned out he was only about 2 inches, and his wife just couldn't get anything off from it. She needed toys or someone bigger for herself. Eventually, we switched things up. I started banging the Asian girl while he was with his wife, and the two girls started kissing. We cycled through more combinations like that until everyone was done. Later, after a few more beers, he asked if I wanted to do it again with the two of them while he videotaped it. I agreed on the condition that he didn't show my face, so he dimmed the lights and gave me a dark blue baseball cap, which I wore pulled low to hide my face and avoided looking at the camera. The next morning, they gave me their cards and told me to call if I was ever in the area again. Both of them worked for city government, in a place far from the beach, but the Asian girl only had a personal card, no business name. Now the awkward part. A couple of months later, I was telling a friend about all this, and he joked, "Do you still have their cards?" I did. So he suggested we Google them, and we found them. It turned out they'd just been fired from their city jobs after the city discovered their corn website. Naturally, we checked out the site. The details I knew too well made it clear it was the same woman. One of the links led us to the Asian girl's corn site. Surprise, surprise. On her page, one thumbnail showed a tall guy doing it from behind, wearing a dark blue baseball cap pulled low to hide his face. My friend has never let me live it down, and now calls me Holmes. Story 10. I have worked in the girl corn industry. I'm very proud of the company I worked with and the work that they produce. I found them in a very interesting way. I was studying gender issues in university, and one of my textbooks mentioned some examples of feminist corn sites. I checked them out and really liked the look of Abby Winters. They focused on natural girls and their real personalities. They would shoot them either alone or with other girls, and the videos that did involve males were the models and their real boyfriends. I'd wanted to try corn for a while. I had done basically everything else in that industry. I mean everything, webcamming, massage parlor, escort. But I wasn't sure how to get into it. I thought I could kill two birds with one stone, as I had also never hooked up with another girl before, but had always wanted to try it. I applied through their website and received a reply the next day. I did a Skype interview and was blown away by how warm and friendly the videographers were. The team was mostly female, but even the male site admins were professional and kind. I took some photos for them, just basic ones without makeup, and they offered to fly me out to their office in Amsterdam for 2 weeks to do a series of shoots. I was pumped. The office was really nice. It sort of looked like a cross between an internet startup and a modeling agency. They put me up in a model house with a few other international models who were all really lovely and friendly. I banged with girls on film. They bought us lunch and I did a few solo shoots as well where I got bare and talked about my interests. It was a really great experience and I made a buttload of money. I have since been back to Amsterdam, over a year later, and did a couple more shoots with them. However, this time around, I had a boyfriend, and he didn't want to do a girl-boy shoot. I understood, but was disappointed. It also felt a bit weird to be doing it with someone other than my partner, so I ended up canceling the last shoot, and they were fine with it, though they teared up and hugged me goodbye. I have a lot of stories. It was really a surreal experience. I love the company and the people I worked with. I wouldn't say I'm out of the corn industry altogether. I may start webcamming again, possibly with Abby Winters, as I have done that in the past, and they are starting it up again. But I'm a full-time student, so I'm focusing more on school right now, but it's nice to be able to turn on the webcam and make a bit of money every now and then. And yes, people I know have found my videos. It made me wonder how much corn they must watch. One was an odd acquaintance, and the other was my ex-boyfriend from high school. Pretty funny. Anyway, good luck guessing who I am. Story 11. When I turned 18, I went to a website that was similar to Craigslist, but specifically for corn jobs. For the life of me, I can't remember the name of the site. I'm 28 now. It had local job postings for New York City and Philadelphia. I submitted my info and some pictures to a few listings and got responses. I ended up meeting with the directors or casting agents, though honestly, it was more like an interview. I'd get there and either mess around with another person auditioning or with the director himself. Basically, whoever was better in bed or looked better on camera would get the job. You didn't get paid during that process. I landed most of the gigs I tried out for, thanks to a guy of mine who had taught me how to be sexy in bed. He was in his 40s, and I had just turned 18 and gotten my driver's license. Eventually, I started getting invited to the better places in New York City, with more attractive guys and larger scenes, three scores, group scenes, that kind of thing. My best story was when I went to New York City and got a job banging with four gorgeous, well-endowed guys at the same time. One of them offered me powder to help me get in the mood. That was the first time I'd ever encountered anyone doing drugs. I declined at that age. I was still easily excited just by the sight of bare men and didn't need any extra help. The scene lasted about 2 hours and had four cameramen on set. My favorite job was another shoot in New York City, where I got to do it with this incredibly handsome man. He had the most amazing blue eyes, perfect scruff, and was an incredible kisser. Once we started, we couldn't stop. The whole thing felt completely real. It wasn't work anymore. We flipped each other good and deep. I made, on average, $100 per scene. I did that work for about a year, usually 4 to 10 scenes a week, sometimes 3 or 4 different scenes in a single day with different partners. I eventually stopped after I was asked to be the bottom in a large group project. I agreed for a set amount, but later they dropped me. When I asked why, the person in charge told me they found someone willing to do it for free. Basically, they found a pig who undercut me, and that cut into a lot of my work. I refused to do scenes for free, so eventually I quit and moved on with my life. Still, I sometimes miss that chapter. It was genuinely fun most of the time, and I met some really interesting people. That said, it's definitely not all glamour. You have to be cautious. I had my fair share of shady situations. Mostly amateurs with some equipment pretending to be legit companies, or people trying to get you in the mood by slipping drugs into drinks. Story 12. Throwaway account, because I've got family who know my main Reddit, and I'd really rather they not find out I've got a tape floating around out there. I didn't exactly work in the industry and never got paid for anything. It all started one night after a friend's wedding party. My girlfriend, now my wife, and I got absolutely smashed and started fooling around once we got home. In the middle of it, I blurted out, "We should record this." So, we grabbed some cameras, set them up around the room, hit record, and ended up filming a 2-hour session. Honestly, it was the best night of my life. The next morning, I grabbed the footage from the cameras. Since video editing and filmmaking have always been my jam, I thought it'd be fun to cut everything together in editing software. I saved the final video to my desktop. A few months later, I let my friend use my computer. After he left, I went back on it and immediately noticed my tape was still on the desktop. Maybe he hadn't seen it. I checked the browser history and discovered he had uploaded the tape to a site. I started crying and called my girlfriend, who was panicking too. When we got home, we read the comments on the site and thought, "Wow, they really like us and our bodies. Maybe we should do this again." Soon enough, we were making videos every weekend and uploading them pretty much every week. It became our favorite little thing until the site we uploaded to got shut down. I'm sure the videos got re-uploaded to bigger sites, but I don't want to find them, and I'm not interested in making more videos to share, since that would only increase the chances of people we know finding them. We have a 16-year-old daughter and a 14-year-old son now. I wouldn't want them and their classmates and such to find out their parents make corn videos together. In case you ever want to attempt the videos, my wife has red shoulder-length hair, fairly big jugs, and I'm the fairly muscular guy with the black hair and beard. Really helpful for all you horny peeps out there, I know. Story 13. I was a cam girl for several sites for a couple years. It was simple, just got tired of going month to month serving, and I really wanted to work for myself. It seems easy, but it's actually pretty mentally exhausting. Not demoralizing or anything? You'd be surprised how respectful most of the men were. MFC was probably the most disrespectful, as free sites tend to be. Still, you have to put on a happy face and pretend to be into it even when you're really not feeling. And then there are the guys who just want to talk because they're lonely. That's always kind of depressing. I probably have a million stories, but the first one that comes to mind is about a guy who really liked farting. Obviously, I can't fart on command, so I told him I could, and quickly downloaded a farting app on my phone. Apparently, those apps are pretty accurate. Lol MAO. I also had a lot of guys who just wanted me to be a total bish to them, like a whole lot of them. One even wanted to be made fun of for being Asian, but he didn't like the racial stuff because I just felt awful spouting all the slurs and stereotypes. My boyfriend is Chinese, so it definitely doesn't reflect my feelings, but I just accept that everyone's into some weird stuff. But after a while, I got really tired of camming, so I started selling inners instead to cut back. At the same time, I began writing Romantica. It took about 8 months before I started making good money from it, but now I earn more than I ever did camming and I'm doing something I genuinely enjoy. So yeah, I definitely took full advantage of the whole thing. Story 14. I worked for a corn company in North Carolina for a couple of years. I'm a guy, and no, I wasn't in front of any camera. The company was a redistribution business, converting hard copy media like DVDs, Blu-rays, and VHS tapes into digital content for the producers. I took the job because I needed something easy. I was burned out from a massive call center job and wanted a mental break. I was hired as a market researcher for the sales team, and after a year I moved over to customer service. The amount of gay corn I was exposed to while doing customer support was astounding. It was, and still is, the highest paying corn niche. So when something went wrong, I had to pull up the videos and play them to replicate the issues. One day, someone had a complaint about a title. I looked it up and saw it was called Big Jugs Babes Being Banged, but it was mislabeled to hide the gay content for troubleshooting purposes. I played the video, and yep, frigging gay corn. Still, I was able to instantly reproduce the issue and got it fixed. I left the job because I got a better offer in Massachusetts. Still, it was one of the most bizarre and fun jobs I've ever had. Story 15. I saw probably a different answer than most. I worked as a movie editor. I got the job through a random Craigslist ad that basically said, must be able to work with adult content. When I showed up, the office was very clean. You'd never know it was a corn company unless you noticed the art on the walls or what people had on their computer screens. It was a professional workplace, but instead of spreadsheets and paperwork, we worked on corn movies and websites. I held that job for 3 years, from around 2008 to 2011, but the industry was already going downhill by then. Eventually, I was laid off because things had slowed so much. I honestly don't know how they managed to keep most of the staff. At the time, I was upset, but it turned out to be for the best. People aren't exactly eager to hire you after working in corn content, so I often just explain what I did without mentioning the nature of the content. It's not what people imagine, Bear Grylls casually walking around and a fun, carefree environment. It's serious business and treated that way. Seeing a lot of bear women over 3 years was cool, and I've got some interesting stories, but honestly, I'd stay away, low pay, high turnover. Story 16. I started out as a production assistant for a friend who had just begun directing and shooting. I worked on only a couple of shoots before moving to England to DJ on a tour. About 6 months later, I came back, and after getting laid off from my job in LA, I called up a buddy I'd met while working on one of the shoots. He got me a job driving girls for one of the talent agencies he was partnered with. I did that for about a year, got laid a lot, it was fun. That same friend also shot content for one of the online companies, and eventually, I started shooting scenes myself. After that, I got a job editing for another online guy, but he ended up blowing all his money, so that ended as quickly as it began. I decided to move back home. I just got sick of LA. My buddy who I'd shot video with drove out with me and helped me move. About a month later, he passed away. Since then, I have zero desire to go back to that industry. Story 17. I worked for the 7th largest straight and 3rd largest gay corn conglomerate. Mostly I handled ad expansion, selling the free product that is corn, and making sure torrents kept churning so we the producers could keep making money. When a big expansion deal I was hired to manage fell through, I took a lucrative severance package. Now, I'm unemployed and honestly, loving it. I know this might not be what you expected, but the corn industry has really evolved into a white-collar corporate world, much like any other lasting high-revenue business. While working there, I met James Dean, Peter North, John Stagliano, Cody Cummings, and Tara Patrick. Story 18. I used to perform solo in a Lucha Libre mask on Cam 4. I wasn't making good money or anything, but it was cool to see the mix between girls and guys that would come in and what they would request. I had one dude that wanted me to just hold my dong and speak Spanish. I cannot speak Spanish. I went to Google Translate and translated a giant wall of text from the Wrestling Observer newsletter and started awkwardly reading it out. I stopped because I started having regulars who would be super creepy, and considering how small Dublin is, I was terrified they would find out who I was. So here I am, reputation unsullied. Story 19. Guy here. During my second year of college, I responded to an ad seeking web design work. It was adult content. Sure, fine, no problem. The guys ended up having issues finding male talent, and were looking. So, I auditioned. I went to one of the producers' houses, where a girl they'd worked with before was already there. She was short, a little chubby, with some baby fat, semi-cute. She gave me a blowy on the couch, and we did it in a few positions while he filmed. The point of the audition was to see if I could stay up and finish on camera. Spoiler, it's not as easy as you'd think. I ended up doing 4 shoots for them. They even flew me to another city for one. After that, I think the production company either folded or lost funding. Weirdest shoot. A girl came over with her boyfriend. After I finished a scene, I was just hanging around, learning the ropes behind the camera. She started giving him blowy for 2 or 3 minutes, but he couldn't get his lil guy up. I ended up stepping in, banged her, and gave her a facial while her boyfriend watched. I felt kind of bad, pretty sure they were just desperate for the money. Story 20. I work as a cam girl. I got into it after realizing that waking up at 4 in the morning to work in a kitchen just wasn't for me anymore. I had started my own business and was struggling to keep it afloat. A friend of mine was already camming and had nothing but good things to say. So I figured, what the hell, sent in some pictures, set up a profile, and now I solo off professionally. I've got plenty of stories, but my favorite part is finding creative ways to blend intimacy into everyday tasks to keep things fun. Cooking dinner? It becomes a bear cooking show. Karaoke? If the guys don't like the song, I spank myself. Sexy card games. Blowy trivia nights. Naughty gaming sessions. Bear laundry folding. You know how people add in bed to the end of phrases to make them sound dirty? That's basically my life. Story 21. Finally, a post I can answer. I was never actually in any scenes, but I spent a long time behind the camera. It all started when I was 18. I met a guy in high school. We'll call him Paul. We were both dealing with problems at home and connected quickly, becoming good friends. At the time, I was starting to get into drugs to cope with everything going on. One day, when my usual guy couldn't come through, Paul said he knew someone who could hook me up. I agreed without hesitation, and we left school early to go get it. He took me right across the street from our high school to an apartment where his older brother lived. His name was Chris, and unbeknownst to me at the time, he also ran an amateur corn site. We hit it off right away. He became a kind of older brother or father figure. Something I had been missing. He started looking out for me, and before long, I was affectionately known as the intern in the new circles I found myself in. A couple of weeks went by, and Chris started inviting me over to hang out. Eventually, he asked if I wanted a job. At first, I was just mailing out DVDs. People had ordered online. After a few months, once he trusted me more, he took me out one night to work as his camera guy. It never really struck me as strange. At least not until senior year, when I ended up filming a couple of girls I had gone to school with since middle school. I did this for about 1.5 years before moving away to college. But on all the major holidays, I'd go back and help him out. The last shoot I did with him, he rented a houseboat with 6 girls, and we filmed all weekend. Eventually, it came to an end when he moved to Europe, and I decided I wanted a more traditional lifestyle. We're still good friends to this day. He even sends me new videos he shot and asks for my opinion. Story 22. 10 years ago, I ran some solo girl sites. I started as the webmaster, then began helping on shoots and learning studio lighting and photography. Lighting for corn is very different from lighting for art or portraiture. the posing is obviously quite different too. I was impressed by the professionalism and mutual courtesy on set, and I feel sorry when I hear about demeaning experiences others have had. I used to wear two buttons to shoots. One said, "I guess I need to do something with my college degree," and the other was Beavis and Butthead, saying, "Wouldn't be cool if girls, like, did what you wanted?" Honestly, it was pretty cool. Having an attractive young woman willingly come into the studio and spread for us was fun, and we treated them all respectfully, which they appreciated. So, after the shoots, we almost always got a hug. No, I never tried to hook up with any of them. That's part of the respectfully thing. The best story was inviting Peyton to the studio for a shoot. She drove all the way in from Ohio. Her work might be outdated now, but back then asking, "Can you fit that in?" and having her reply, "Sure, watch," was pretty amazing. I quit because when my business partner got sick, running an indie website just didn't pay enough anymore. I still shoot studio art nudes though. Coming up with corno poses is easy, but finding a variety of good non-cliche art poses is tough, and getting the lighting right is always a challenge. Story 23. I technically worked in the corn industry. I had an online job where I had hundreds of short corn clips and thumbnails sent to me, and I had to make a description and video name. My best story is finding one of my hot acquaintances corn this way. In the past, this would have me gone from 6 to midnight in 2 seconds, but after passing days and days of watching all kind of corn, I had become desensitized. I stopped shortly after because I didn't want to affect my intimate drive more. In the end, the only good thing about that job is that I can brag about having worked in the corn industry. Story 24. I was dissatisfied with the lack of real or convincing older younger corn out there. I'm talking about teacher and schoolgirl, dad's friend and daughter, cop and perpetrator type stuff. The guys are usually too young and compensate with fake glasses, fake bewilderment, fake old people clothes, or something silly like that. And the girls are virtually never into it. I said to my boyfriend, "Why don't we make some real corn?" Also, my boyfriend is 28 years older than me. We made an account on a couple of sites, which I don't even remember the name of right now. We got a good response on one of the sites, so we made a paid account and put up a few videos there. The money trickled in, at about $50 per month. The uploader gets a small percentage, and we were happy with that. When we started, I wasn't entirely aware of the demographic on the site, and it turned out my boyfriend was the one with the fan base. He's the chubby daddy type, which turned out to be fairly popular with some of that audience. A producer in the UK, we are in the US, was alerted to our videos and asked us if we'd make content for his site, which specializes in older chubby guys and is directed towards a gay audience. He was very nice and gave us a very fair percentage of the profits. He gave us all kinds of pointers about lighting, camera angles, B-rolls, what the audience wants and doesn't want, etc. We discovered the bloopers were popular as well, so we added those to the ends of the videos. He was extremely helpful, and we made around $1,000 a month for a few months. Some months were only a few hundred, but we were happy with anything. We were able to take a vacation in Europe with the money as well as a couple small road trips near home. We haven't sent content to his site for a pretty long time now, perhaps 1.5 years or so. However, we still get a tiny bit of money trickling in once in a great while, and even though we haven't made the effort to keep in touch with him, he still sends us our share, which I think is very honest and kind of him. We were lucky to meet that kind of producer. A couple Christmases we shipped him packages of homemade candy. It was that kind of relationship. Story 25. After graduating college, I applied to a company called Cyberheat to be a web developer. They were the only ones remotely interested in my resume. I started in the HTML department, writing blurbs and creating thumbnails for tour pages across all kinds of corn, straight and gay. Eventually, I moved into full programming, writing back-end scripts to monitor and maintain content production. I also played a big role in building their first mobile websites during the early smartphone years, testing everything on my old Android G1 and an iPod Touch. One story that always comes up is when I helped develop the mobile platform for a fartcorn site, thousands of clips, mostly extreme close-ups of their back doors. It was genuinely gross, and always restored my faith in humanity when I'd see it had zero sales. Also, during a programmer meeting while a few performers were in town, a corn star briefly sat on my lap, definitely one for the books. After 5 years I was laid off. I've since heard they sold off their content. I really miss the people though. They were a lot of fun to be around. Story 26. I worked as a video editor for the biggest video on demand company in the world from around 2004 to 2008, so yeah, I saw a lot of corn. We all treated it kind of like handling money at a bank. It was just work. Honestly, we didn't even see that much crazy stuff. Most of it just ended up being funny to us. Corn stars would occasionally come through the studio, and the executives would walk around asking if anyone wanted a photo with them. Our team always passed. The owner or some higher up would poke their head in and say, "Hey, you guys want a picture with so-and-so?" And we'd just go, "Nah, we're good." A lot of the stars who came in looked rough, nothing like how they appeared in the videos. I worked with a ton of stoners too. I'd say at least 60 to 70% of the company was high most of the day. Eventually I moved on to another job, but honestly, it wasn't a bad gig at all. Story 27. I did a small stunt dong role once. I was at a tattoo shop getting some work done when this couple walked in, chatted with the owner, and walked around the place. The guy stopped to ask me about my tattoos, and then asked if I'd ever modeled. I hadn't. Meanwhile, the woman kept giving me these intense looks. The guy handed me his card and said he represented Urban Models, and that I might be a good fit for a specific website. I was 21 at the time, and found myself mulling it over. Do I really do this? What if it's a scam? Eventually I called. They asked me to come in. So, the next day, I showed up with a basic CVS headshot, a rough resume, and two forms of ID. The guy and I talked for a bit, and then he asked to see all the tattoos on my upper body. So I took off my shirt and showed him. He asked if I had any ink elsewhere. Yeah, on my knees and upper thighs. He asked to see those too. And I noticed he couldn't stop looking at my downtown area. So, there I was, standing around in my undies, explaining my tattoos for a solid 20 minutes. Eventually, he got to the point. He said he was looking for someone with a punk flair to be in a corno film with a girl he claimed was going to be the next big breakout star. At first, I noped the hell out of it. I didn't want my face plastered all over the internet, especially not in something that could come back and bite me later. The guy told me he'd cover the cost of my pre-scene blood work and checkup, and that they'd film it in a way where my face wouldn't be visible. The whole time though, I was thinking, you'll still see my tattoos, and I've got some pretty noticeable ink. Then he threw out a number more than fair, for just a day's work. So, I said yes. It was awkward. I'd never sat down with a girl and gone over a literal checklist of what was okay and what wasn't during the scene. Definitely not your average workday. Story 28. One of my partners a while back got into working as a cam girl until her family found out. It was interesting. Definitely learned some things I didn't know before. 90% of the guys who watch cam girls are generally pretty even-keeled people. 8% have some kind of social impairment. They're nice enough, but you can tell they're a bit out of sync with the rhythm of normal human interaction. Then there's the remaining 2%, the creepers and a-holes. These are the ones who make wild demands in chat and then go full all caps internet rage when a model refuses to try and fit a watermelon in her honeypot. Thankfully, the 98% is usually pretty good at shutting down the 2%, but it can still get weird and aggressive sometimes. There's some serious camaraderie between most cam girls. I expected there to be some general politeness, but the out-and-out friendliness and help extended by virtually everyone my partner met was pretty surprising. People who get nasty and competitive generally get frozen out of the community pretty quick, and they even tend to lose fans, which is where your real money comes from. The fan culture is surprisingly deep. Just like anything, people have favorites, and you can develop a following as a cam model. These people give you a lot of money, either as tips or from buying clips and private shows. There's also a lot of exchange that goes on outside of the cam sites over services like Skype for things that most sites don't allow. There's also a high demand for curvy models. Rail thin does exist in the cam model world, but it tends to be the rounder of shape that gets the most attention. Story 29. I was a cam girl for about 2 years, and honestly, it was a lot of fun. I was well regarded by the studio I worked for since I was the only transgender performer they had at the time. I made them a lot of money and made a lot for myself too. I first found out about camming when I gave a ride to a girlfriend for what she called her job. Later, she told me it was for a cam party, and that definitely piqued my interest. I asked if she could connect me with the studio. One day, she happened to meet a girl who wanted to rejoin the studio. She was a former employee, and I was her ride. After they got her signed up, I had a chat with the admin, and I ended up getting signed up too. On my first day, I was so nervous, but by the end of it, I started to get into a flow. Before I knew it, I was making over $400 a week, which was a lot, especially for an indigent trans woman trying to get by. I liked camming because it was genuinely good for my self-esteem. I had guys telling me how beautiful, sexy, and amazing I was, and as someone who struggled a lot with self-trans shame, it really made a difference. I started taking better care of myself. I lost weight, got in shape, did my makeup really well every day, and found myself smiling more naturally. I became more gregarious, more social, and more confident in my own skin. My best story was a guy who paid me $5 a minute just for me to watch him put the entirety of a 2 feet fake dong in his back door. I didn't have to do a thing. I stopped because I just didn't have the technological setup to keep going. When my streaming computer broke, the cash flow stopped, and without that income, I couldn't afford my studio apartment, which had doubled as my performance space. If I had the chance, I'd start again in a heartbeat. Those were good times. Story 30. I worked as a cam girl for about 4 months. It all started pretty randomly. I had a Tumblr blog where I followed a few cam girls, and then one day I lost my job. I refused to go back to fast food, so I ended up camming for those 4 months with support from my ex-boyfriend. I even did a show or two with a local girl who was already fairly popular, including one that involved that same ex. I don't really have a best story, but I did meet a lot of cool people, other models, clients, and so on. Eventually, I started having issues in my relationship, and sex lost its meaning for me with my partner. It started to feel like a job rather than something fun, so to save the relationship, I quit. It just wasn't for me, though I know plenty of girls who really loved it. My relationship ended anyway, for reasons unrelated to camming. I got a job as a server right after, and now life is good. Story 31. I was 18 at the time and had to pass exams for a private business school I thought was cool, though I ended up hating it because it was full of rich, spoiled kids, so I quit and later earned my master's degree from another school. Back then, I needed to pass a logic test for the entrance exam. It was like an IQ test. I'm not very good at those, and the only training courses I found online cost money, but I didn't want to borrow my parents' credit card. Knowing there was money to be made in the online webcam industry, I downloaded some software and videos of girls doing performances in front of their computers. I set up the software to play those videos instead of my own webcam. Then I found some naive guys online who were gullible enough to pay me just for pressing the play button and pretending to be a girl. One even gave me his credit card number, which I used to pay for my logic exam training sessions. In the end, I scored 8 out of 20 on the logic test, but my grades in the other exams were high enough to pass the oral examination, which I aced because I'm more persuasive than skillful. Story 32. It's not super crazy, but I was a corn director's personal assistant. I helped pick up all the cases, cameras, and all the random stuff needed for filming. I also picked up the talent. One time, we were filming north of the Golden Gate Bridge in a park without permits. My job was to haul all the cameras down to an old bunker. After that, I stood on the road with a radio to give a warning if park rangers showed up. Being security-minded, I made up a whole backstory for why I was just sitting out there waiting. A park ranger pulled up, and I gave the warning call, but the guy was just eating his lunch and left. He stared at me a little longer than I was comfortable with, so I followed the road down to where he had probably pulled a pylon out of the ground blocking the road. I filled the gap between the pylon and the hole with sandy shale. An hour later, a patrol car came around. The cop got out, fiddled with the pylon for a minute, then left. The next day, the director told me she didn't need me anymore. They got caught by the police. However, she was slick. She hid the incriminating video and convinced the cops they were filming a gay documentary, so she walked away with only a fine. She gave me a $500 bonus for not taking me the next day. Story 33. My ex-girlfriend hit a really low spot. Her father was a mess, and her mother kicked her out because she wanted to be an artist. She tried doing art on her own but couldn't sell enough to make a living. To make extra money, she started doing small cam shows. I'd ask her where the money was coming from, but she'd hide it from me. One day, I noticed some things left around her new webcam and figured it out. I broke up with her because I wasn't comfortable with my girlfriend being bare for other men. That pushed her even lower, and she became kind of a hermit so she could cam all day. The attention from those men made her feel good. I believe she got contacted by email to do solo videos for a small studio. Things escalated from there, and now she's in a bunch of low-quality corn. So, moral of the story, I banged a corn star. Thank you for watching. If you enjoyed this video, be sure to give it a thumbs up, subscribe, and hit the bell icon so you never miss an update.
Between vacations, errands, and everyday summer chaos, sticking to your health goals can be tough. Luckily, Thrive Market does the hard work for you. We're the online healthy grocery store that cuts out the junk ingredients and delivers high-quality groceries right to your door. From low-sugar beach snacks to organic grill night staples, no matter your health goal, we make shopping healthy a breeze. Go to thrivemarket.com/get started for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.